Marcus Zahaba Online Radio, serving you wherever you are.
8:36 Central African Time, at that time of the morning, where we join our very own Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam, a Member of Parliament, the leader of the NFP. And alhamdulillah, he keeps us up to speed with what's happening, the weekend headlines also, and what's the latest from the Parliament. Ahmed, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning, Ahmed?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, beautiful morning in the city of Durban, no doubt about that. Well, as far as COVID, the numbers appear to be very low in terms of infections, but you're averaging about 10, 15 deaths a day. And the infection rates hovering around 3, 4, 500 average on a day. The latest is, well, of course, Eskom and the issue of the stage 6 load shedding. And, of course, some of these in the hospitals are saying we are playing Russian roulette with the lives of our patients because of power going off so often. It's having a devastating effect on many businesses. It's estimated billions of rands are being lost as a result of loss of income. And also, you know, particularly, you know, food industry is affected quite a bit, like bakeries and others, you know. So this is having quite an effect on the economy as a whole. The public protector says, well, their officers are going ahead. There's an ongoing investigation onto the Farmgate scandal. Remember, the president is supposed to have responded, but he has not responded currently to them. The child that fell into that drain, that man of Brother Shafford, has been found 20 kilometers away, can you imagine? And the cause of the death of the 21 children, there are now, the latest report says that it could perhaps have been carbon monoxide as a result of the petrol generator, but still more investigations need to be done. But what is strange enough, you know, the police have now handed it back to the tavern owner. Despite the tavern owner breaching the regulations, they allowed him to come and take all his alcohol and everything away. And normally when you're selling on the street corners, and if you did not have a permit and things like that, you know, then they confiscate your goods and they take it away. But you can see the double standards, basically, what is happening after a tragedy with 21. Now, I'm told there's a protest that is going to be taking place, asking for the tavern owner to be held accountable. But what about the municipality? I mean, they have given these people the authority to trade, and they did nothing about making sure that they were compliant. Where is the law enforcement together with the municipality? So I think more than just the tavern owner needs to take responsibility for exactly what is going on there. But other than that, I think, you know, the concern that many, many people are raising, and I know that it's coming up where Parliament is in recess, and that's why there's no latest development. But what I can tell you is this, that there is going to be an attempt to overthrow the president or ask a vote of no confidence or an impeachment process. But there's a march also taking place, I'm told, next week to Luthuli House, demanding that the president step aside.
Yeah, absolutely, Ahmed. And, you know, really people think about what we're going through in this country. I don't know if you saw that report back on the Eskom, and there was this individual, he posted this on social media, where he did an analysis of how the unions and those 45,000 people that are working for Eskom are putting us South Africans at risk on a pretext. How do you respond to that, Ahmed?
Well, very much so, you know. You know, people are just attacking the CEO and the minister and things like that. Look at the demand that the union is putting right now. So do they have the interest of the people at large? I mean, you know, the Eskom is saying very, very clearly that it is as a result of the protest action by the employees that it has given rise to us going to level 6 and perhaps level 8 if necessary, right? And of course, the unions are saying now the ESCOM is being disingenuous. But if you look at the number of demands and what they are asking for and what they do get paid and all the benefits that they enjoy, given the current economic situation we have and facing in the country, why is it everybody else must be okay with 3% increase or 5% and you want to demand a whole lot more together with all these benefits, given the current situation? So, I'm glad that there is a clearer picture emanating from exactly what is happening in the country as far as ESCOM is concerned. So if you're expecting just the CEO or the management of ESCOM to solve the problems of the energy crisis, no, you're not going to be able to. It's exactly the same thing, Brother Shepherd, that you are, almost held at gunpoint here. And this is the stance of the unions who are running away from this thing. So not just to the ESCOM, with many of the state-owned entities, we're having exactly the same problem. If you see the uproar from the very same unions where public representatives were getting a 3% increase, which they never got for 3 years in any event. Okay, but yet look at the demands that they are making here. So you can see the problem that we are sitting. It's not just about the power stations that we have and the capacity to be able to deliver. But the contributing factors over and above corruption and everything is as a result of the unions and the employees. And if you remember, at one stage, we've been talking about sabotage as well by employees.
Yeah, Ahmed, then it makes you think. People here, the honest, hardworking people are paying rates and taxes, they're paying their bills. And then, in other words, reading that article, listening to that article, it's giving you a clear picture that load shedding 6, 7, 8 is all, it's orchestrated deliberately so that the price of electricity will go up to feed these people, make their bank balance bigger and maybe, making them physically even larger than what they are now. Ahmed, your thoughts?
Well, yes, given the situation in the country, and you can't survive without energy, just not for a household, but for businesses. And in order to generate revenue in this country, to keep people employed in this country, how many businesses are going to be affected and might shut down, Brother Shafat, as a result of the energy crisis? If you take a bakery that is manufacturing bread, Brother Shafat, it's an entire process. If that power goes off, you can lose hundreds of loaves of bread because it's a process, okay? How do you expect these people to function and be able to keep to the demands? They can't do it. Now, what is the alternative? They will have to start shutting down, and that's why so many businesses are shutting down. When they shut down, what it means? It means you're going to get less revenue, more unemployment in the country. Now, why is these unions and things not being reasonable in the demand? And if you remember what I said a couple of weeks ago, that I asked the question to Kosatu one day, why do you start off with such high demand and then eventually settle for a low demand, and having protest march and strikes and everything? And their argument was, no, we have to start high. Start as high as that when you know it's unrealistic, or you want to just impress your members because they're going to contribute. So, and because government is in bed with this, if that's the term I should use, with this tripartite alliance, with the unions and things, they can do very little or nothing about it. If you look at the minister in the last increase that they got, he had to bow down to pressure and give them more than he wanted to give them. But in order to give them, you've got to make sure you have the resources to be able to do that. And you don't have it because there is not enough money in the country to be able to do that.
I'm looking at a message on the screen, and it is from Brother Khalik. He says, "Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed. I must tell you that I'm really cut fall with what's going on with ESCOM and with all the other utilities in this country. But our unions have been getting away for far too long. They have actually brought this country to its knees, and they're playing the game of the culprits here. Please, Ahmed, something should be done here. What happens if the government decides, like Britain did many years ago, to do away with unions? Talk to me, Ahmed." That's what Khalik says.
Ahmad, Brother Shafa, the question you need to ask, would the relationship that the unions have enjoyed with government and dictate to government, how is it that the unions did nothing, absolutely nothing, to prevent corruption, looting, and maladministration in this country? Absolutely nothing. On the contrary, unions defend their employees. That is exactly what they do, right or wrong. Let me give you a good example of Parliament, for a good example. A man committed suicide, an employee committed suicide in Parliament, Brother Shepherd, in protest against the conduct of management. Okay? And the manager goes and gets his contract extended now for another 8 months. Where is the union, even though the public servants commission found the manager guilty on some of those charges that were laid against him, right? Nothing. So where is the union when it needs to protect these employees? No, their interest is what they're getting out of it and the membership. That is why they're worth so much of money. What is these unions doing in this country, Brother Shafan, to boost job opportunities? Tell me, what are they doing? What mechanisms have they put in place to ensure that they can empower people that are unemployed to go and work? Nothing. So the easiest thing for you to do to be relevant is to create an environment to go out there and strike as if you really do care about these workers. Okay? But what about the rest of the people? What about the entire rest of... you're talking about 44,000 here. What about the rest of the 62 million people? What are they supposed to do? So the unions, to be honest with you, that relationship, they're actually holding government, you know, at gunpoint. That's basically what it is. With always threatening them, they're going to go on their own, they're going to do this. And government has got a problem. And when I say government, the ANC particularly, it's because they rely on this tripartite alliance because of the relationship that they built for the votes. And I think it doesn't take a rocket scientist to tell you, and we would have known this years ago, that eventually it's going to come back to bite them, their reliance on these unions. And this is exactly what you are seeing now. So the unions, as far as I'm concerned, don't even care about their employees, and they don't care about the general public. It's about the membership that they are getting every month. That's what it is all about. If they cared about the workers, can you look at the working condition of those in the retail sector? What have they done about the foreign businesses in the country that employ cheap labor, which is in violation of the labor regulation on the minimum wage? Nothing. So let me tell you, the unions have got no interest in the majority of the people. It's all about what they get out of it and nothing more than that.
Yeah, you talk about the alliance of the union with the ANC government. Have they any other alliances also with other parties, Ahmad?
Well, no, not really. Most of them are aligned in one way or the other to the ANC, but I see the EFF is talking about opening up its own union. Yeah, so that's generally what it is. But now, how can unions, or why should they be aligned to political parties, organizations aligned to government, if you want to be objective and promote the interest of your employees? You ought to be objective or independent. But where is your independence if you're aligned to a political party, particularly if you take the unions in this country aligned to the ANC government? Okay. What have they been doing to raise concerns about policies in the country when it comes to these things? And like I said, corruption, looting and everything, because ultimately it affects. Now, let us be honest. Everywhere you found corruption, employees are involved as well, right? They have to be involved. There's a corrupter, there's a corruptee. Where is the unions? Have you ever heard the union say anything about all these officials thus far, even in the PPE scandal and every other scandal? Did you ever hear the unions come up and say, no, this is wrong, this is what we need to do, this is the problem with our employees? They're not. They will defend the employees when they have to do. When you go suspend them, they are the ones coming to defend them. They are the ones that are going out there in those hearings and attempting to defend these people. This is what is going on. So the unions don't have an interest really in the country, and unions are destructive in my view, to be honest with you. Now the question is, what do you do? Do you then take it away from government because there's too much of expectation from government and then privatize? Then we're saying don't privatize it either. You can see the problem we have been sitting with. Don't privatize it, let it nationalize it, let it fall under government. When it is under government, then you're holding government to do. Now, can you imagine if you have to do the EFF policy of nationalization and everything is going to be run by government, and then all of these people decide to go on strike. Can you imagine what is going to happen?
No, exactly. You can see what's happening with ESCOM. It's because of the strike, then you're getting load shedding 6 and you're going to 8. And it's there, clear as crystal. But it seems we are helpless, Ahmed. What can we do as citizens? I mean, we are actually in a very hopeless situation. Your thoughts?
For those of you who can perhaps come off the grid and go into solar heating and things like that, it might be an idea, even as a long-term investment. It might be one of the routes to go. But again, you know, it simply means, Brother Shafford, that we are in a crisis as far as governance in South Africa. And it is not easy even to be the ruling party. Let me reiterate that it's not easy to be. Yes, there's a whole lot of mistakes being made by the ruling party. But opposition parties too don't want to do anything to try and solve the problem, because they can only capitalize when there's weaknesses on the ruling party. So that is the other problem. So can you imagine when you are being attacked all the time, you rather than start, you know, defending yourself. And that's the problem we're fighting in the country. So I think, you know, what South Africa really needs now is to go back to the drawing board and look at all our policies that have not worked and rewrite, you know, these things so that we could learn from the mistakes and how do we go forward. But currently, I want to tell you, with the leadership we have in the country, and I must tell you, with many of the political parties and what they are demanding, South Africa is not going to be a better place anytime in the near future. It seems like you're going to go to an all-time low before you start rising again. One of the problems you got is education, and the quality of education is also impacting on the ability of people to apply their minds and think and make the right decisions as well. So, yes, I think we're going to be for a very rough ride. They're going through a rough ride for quite a period of time. But we need to rise. People need to rise. I think more and more people need to be vocal about the stance of the union. We need to condemn them when it's necessary as well, not just condemn government, but condemn anybody and everybody that has a role to play in this situation we find ourselves with ESCOM or with any other entity. I think it is only fair that we must come out and be vocal about it so people can see. Otherwise, the unions are using what is happening, blaming ESCOM for everything else, but they're also responsible for it, and we're not getting a clear picture. And because we are not saying enough and doing enough about it, Brother Shem, unions are getting away with it as well. I think the observation of the brother was absolutely correct. The unions have been getting away for far too long in this country, and I think the time has come for us to be able to take them on as well if we want to create a better future for the generations to come.
You know, Ahmed, you make a point, all right, get off the grid, but then you'll find government, you know, imposing taxes on people that are off the grid. Perhaps, you know, you must pay so much a month to the government for being off the grid. And, you know, they'll find any excuse to get hold of you and trip you. And also, if you have boreholes, very soon they'll be charging you a tax on your borehole, too. You know, you have to pay license and so forth. Talk to me, Ahmed.
You are correct, Brother Shafford. We can expect that from government because government is desperate. You can see 13% of the people in this country pay taxes to look after the rest of the country. And it's the only country in the world that happens. So you're taking the blood out of the bone and you'll continuously be doing that. But I think what is important here is to have a policy. In other words, we need to go back to the drawing board, put a policy in place. Government does not have the ability to be able to provide us with this energy. And as such, this is what people are going to be able to do, because remember, for you to go and put those alternative energy, it means it's going to cost you a lot of money, and it's got to be a win-win situation. It's a win-win situation for government because there's less pressure on them, because there will be a less demand. But they cannot also expect you to still go and pay taxes and things on that, okay, when you've got a commitment that you might have to pay for 20 years and 25 years to offset the debt that you've incurred to go and put this alternative energy. So again, I think we need to get to the drawing board and make sure that it is a policy that government will not be able to do that. It's the only way you're going to protect the people. But I must admit that I agree with you. They will find any way and other way, because even of your current charges at the moment, you've got a fixed charge over and above you pay for your units when it comes to energy. Same thing with water and everything else. So the question is, if you don't need it at all, why should you even be paying that fixed charge? You know, and I think it's a relevant question. Right now, you're paying for a fixed charge for 30 days a month. They must give you the service. Half the time, they're not giving you the service, but you're still paying for it. You understand? You're paying for water fixed charges, but even though they're not giving you water, there's no water for weeks in some of the homes. So I think these are matters that should be addressed. Remember that any municipalities buy energy from Eskom and then sell for them to be able to make a profit out of it and things. And one also needs to look at how much do they buy, how much are they selling, how much profit are they making, and how much profit are they making annually for them? Is it for to be used for other purposes other than just on the energy? In fact, even on the issue of your electricity bills, you know, even if people want to go on a prepaid meter, which might be the right thing to go, because my understanding is the rates are the same, you can't get it. It takes you over 2 years in Durban alone for you to get a prepaid meter. That's how bad it is. They can't even provide that. And yet they say people are not paying. But there's an opportunity. People will pay upfront. If you put prepaid meter, they don't have the capacity to be able to provide that.
Yeah, I'm absolutely brilliant this morning. I noticed the Quran is going to start just now. Inshallah, you're going to have a mashallah, a blessed day ahead. I'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Yes, as I said, a juz a day, 63 minutes uninterrupted. Don't forget Mufti AK Hussein's Q&A from 2 to 4 p.m. This afternoon. Jazakallah khair, and thank you very much, Boniface, for top engineering from the team and I. Till we meet you again, we bid you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.